I now give the floor to His Excellency Murray McCulley, Minister for Foreign Affairs of New Zealand.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, it's an honour to address you today on behalf of the Prime Minister and Government of New Zealand. Our general election took place last week. Our Prime Minister, the Right Honourable John Key, is engaged in forming a new government, and that is why he is unable to be here in New York. I want to begin by acknowledging the success of the recent Small Island Developing States Conference held in Samoa. The success of the conference was the result of the extraordinary work Samoa put into preparing for the conference and the ownership of the agenda that was demonstrated by Small Island Developing States. While it is undoubtedly true that Small Island Developing States placed great value on the opportunity to talk, it is also true that there was an undertone of frustration born of the fact that too often in the past, talk has not been followed by action. I strongly identify with this view. The multilateral world is awash with talk of plans and strategies and funds, while out there in the real world of small island developing states, not enough is happening on the ground. My country, New Zealand, is intent on avoiding this shortcoming, especially in our own region, the Pacific. Renewable energy featured strongly at the SIDS conference agenda, as it has at the Secretary General's summit last week. Pacific nations spend 10% of their GDP and up to 30% of their entire import bills on importing diesel for electricity generation. Sustainable economic development, therefore, simply cannot happen in our region without renewable energy. Significant progress is being achieved, especially since the Pacific Renewable Energy Summit we co-hosted with the European Union in Auckland in March 2013, which $635 million in funding was committed to over 50 projects. The Tokelau Islands has moved from 100% dependence on fossil fuels to 93% renewable. During the SIDS conference itself, we opened a 2.2 megawatt plant, a solar array in Samoa. A year earlier, we opened a 1.2 megawatt plant in Tonga. Next month, we'll open a 1 megawatt array in Rarotonga. And in the next 12 months, all of the outer islands of Tuvalu and all but one of the outer islands of the Cooks will be close to 100% renewable. Ladies and gentlemen, we are making real progress towards converting our Pacific neighbourhood to renewable energy, bringing significant environmental benefits and greatly enhancing prospects for sustainable economic development. My country has committed over $100 million to this process. We are not waiting for a new multilateral agreement or a new green fund. We are simply getting ahead with robust partnerships and making it happen. Another key topic at the SIDS conference was sustainable fisheries. For our region, this is critically important. The biggest economic asset in the Pacific is its fishery. Last year, over $3.3 billion worth of tuna, US dollars, was harvested from the Pacific waters. Yet only 14% of that value, about $460 million, made its way back to Pacific nations. New Zealand has committed over $70 million over the next 5 years to advance a comprehensive approach that includes enhanced surveillance, training of monitors, training in commercial fishing practices, research and science initiatives, and improving management practices. Our objective is to see the owners of the Pacific tuna resource receive a significantly greater share of the value of that resource and to ensure that it is sustainably managed for the future. A key message from the SIDS conference is the need to share experiences and skills between the SIDS regions. It's starting to happen. Fisheries management is a prime candidate for greater cooperation. And we have commenced a process of inter-regional cooperation in renewable energy by supporting the development of geothermal energy in the Caribbean and Africa. While small island developing states are showing real leadership in addressing climate change and shifting to renewable energy, they require action on a global scale. So we commend the Secretary General for convening the Climate Summit here in New York last week. We are participating actively in those negotiations and hope they will pave the way for a successful conclusion in Paris next year. We have made an initial commitment to the Green Climate Fund to show our support for the global effort. But unashamedly, we will continue to prioritise making real progress with real projects in our own region, which will continue to consume the bulk of our resources. The other major event which has recently taken place in the Pacific is the election in Fiji. We congratulate the Prime Minister, his party, and the people of Fiji on their successful return to democratic rule. Fiji's successful elections are hugely important for the region. And I'm delighted that following the preliminary report of the multinational observers group, both the Pacific Islands Forum and the Commonwealth have commenced the process of lifting Fiji's suspension. We look forward to rebuilding and strengthening the connections between us. Neither New Zealand nor Fiji can contemplate a future that does not entail close and continuing links with the other. We also welcome the safe return of Fiji's peacekeepers who were held hostage in the Golan Heights. That incident again underlined the great challenges and the dangers faced by UN peacekeepers and the responsibilities we all have to ensure the safety and security of peacekeeping and other UN personnel. It is well that we are able to note some bright spots in our own region because the situation in other parts of the world does look bleak. What happened over the past few months in Gaza was an affront to humanity. No good was done for the cause of Palestine by Hamas firing rockets indiscriminately into Israel. No good was done for peace in the Middle East by Israel pounding Gaza with such intensity and at such cost of civilian lives. We welcome the ceasefire that was agreed after so many false starts and are thankful that so far it endures. We call on all sides not only to keep the guns and rockets silent, but to refrain from actions that may destabilise what can only be described as an uneasy peace. In this connection, we express our profound regret of Israel's appropriation of 400 hectares of privately owned Palestinian land near Bethlehem for settlements. This act itself is profoundly unhelpful. The problems of the Middle East are deep and difficult. They go back to the earliest days of this organisation and beyond. But what has happened over the past months in and in relation to Gaza was a modern failure, a failure of leadership, of purpose and of vision. We urge the leaders of Israel and of Palestine, both the West Bank and Gaza, to live up to their responsibilities to their peoples and to their positions. In Syria and Iraq, we see the truly frightening consequences when leadership, both internally and in the Security Council, has failed. Syria has been a weeping sore for over 3 years. Thousands of Syrians have died, millions have become refugees, and all Syrian people have suffered terribly from the multiple conflicts engulfing the country. And now the tragedy of Syria has spilled over into Iraq, which was already wrestling with its own deep-seated problems. Many actors in both recent past and over a longer time frame have had a hand in contributing to the situation we now confront. But now is a time for action. We need to find a way to contain the madness that is ISIL, to address the humanitarian tragedy and help the people of Syria and Iraq craft a better future. by any objective standard, this is a situation that cries out for Security Council attention. And that is true of both sides of the border. We need the council members and the governments concerned to move past the ideological stalemate that has kept the council largely impotent for the past 3 years. The challenge we all face in Syria and Iraq is unlike any the United Nations has faced before. The political circumstances in which it is being played out are about as bad as they get. Yet somehow we need to find a way of coming together to defeat this shared problem. Paralysis has also prevailed in the Security Council over the Ukraine. The Council has been essentially a bystander as one of the permanent members of the Council has undermined the integrity of another member state. We recognise the difficulties of managing ethnic tensions at straddle borders and the risks of local fires being stoked into wider national and international crises. But with the strong shared histories of cooperation and achievement between Russia and the Ukraine, there is no excuse for leaders allowing matters to unravel as they have to the point where international peace and security may be at risk. And already hundreds of innocent civilians on flight MH17 have lost their lives through an associated mistake and miscalculation. We welcome the ceasefire that was agreed earlier this month and which is held for the most part. We call on all involved to step back, to think about what is at stake, and start rebuilding the trust that is essential to finding a lasting solution. Events in the Middle East and Ukraine have dominated the headlines in recent months and diverted attention from the serious situations that continue to play out in Africa, particularly in Libya, Mali, Central African Republic, South Sudan, Somalia, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. These crises in which the UN is directly involved continue to challenge the capacity of the organisation and of the African Union to respond to the sheer scale of human suffering and the continuing need for external assistance to restore and keep the peace, keep civilian populations safe, and deliver humanitarian assistance. These issues, no less than those in the Middle East and Eastern Europe, will continue to require constant attention from the Security Council and the coordinated efforts of the wider UN family. They show that for all its failings and structural inequalities, the Council still has a vital role to play in maintaining international peace and security. But there is one lesson we must learn from all of these recent crises. The UN must fundamentally improve its performance in preventing conflict. Once fighting is in full spate, the options for peace disappear. Prevention is critical, not just in new conflicts, but in the cases on the agenda where conflict has been frozen or where peace building has not really taken hold. We are deeply troubled by the unprecedented scale of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. We recognise the huge challenges this poses for the economies and to the political and security cohesion of the region. We've contributed and will continue to contribute to the humanitarian work underway. And on the formation of a new government, we will look at further practical steps to support the international effort. In 18 days' time, the UN membership will decide who will be on the Security Council for the next two-year term. New Zealand has been a candidate for that position since 2004. It is 20 years since we were last on the Council. It has been a long and demanding campaign, and it will continue right up till the elections on the 16th of October. With tough competitors such as our good friends Spain and Turkey, that has to be the case. The campaign has been a great opportunity for us to engage with nations around the world. We greatly value the new relationships we have forged and the enhanced character of existing relationships. Whatever the outcome, we are determined to maintain these. New Zealand has demonstrated in the past that as a member of the Council, it acts strongly, effectively, and independently. It champions the rights of small states and for the voices of all to be heard. In short, as my Prime Minister said from this rostrum last year, there is no point in being on the Council simply to make up the numbers. Sometimes you have to speak up and shine a light on what is going on or not going on, even when it is embarrassing or inconvenient to others to do so. Above all, I can assure you that if we are elected, New Zealand will be a credible, positive influence on the Security Council. At our core, New Zealand is an optimistic country, and New Zealanders are optimistic people. We believe that things can be better than they are, and are prepared as a people to work hard to achieve that. Despite the many challenges on the international agenda, my hope is that the membership of the United Nations will give us an opportunity to prove this by serving on the UN Security Council from next year. Thank you.
I thank the Minister for Foreign Affairs of New Zealand for his statement.